Press start.
You're about to enter another dimension. A dimension not only of sound and more sound, but also of mind. A journey into a wondrous land of comic books and gaming. Welcome to the Z2 Podcast. As always, I am your host, Zach.
I am your co-host, Zach.
And Steve's dead this week.
Yep. Rip Steve.
Zach and I just got back from Emerald City Comic Con along with Kayla. Kayla got food poisoning. Steve wasn't with us, and we're recording very late and last minute, and Steve cannot join us, but he'll be back next week. He is indeed alive. Spoilers. I'm so sorry.
He's not a ghost.
BJ, however,
still. What's that? Fuck you, BJ.
And before we start, we made an announcement today. We formally declare battle against Thinking Outside Longbox in either a game of Super Fight or Million Dollars Butt, the card game. I don't think we've ever played Million Dollars Butt as a recording.
Nope. We've yet to do that.
That'll be exciting. Yeah, we went. I went to the Skybound booth this past weekend, and I was just talking one of the reps up, telling him that we've played it a couple of times on the podcast. He hooked me up with, like, two extra free cards you can only get at conventions, and then they have like a new geek deck. They have a new red deck.
I think there was a drunk sexy time deck or something.
Yeah, there's a drunk sexy time deck. There's a Walking Dead deck. There's a new anime deck. So a lot of cool stuff.
We need to play that. We need to play Secret Hitler.
Yes, Secret Hitler by the guys from Cards Against Humanity. It's a lot of cool stuff. A lot of cool board games are coming out, and we just want to play them all. Screw video games. Fuck that noise.
How dare you? There's Mass Effect on the horizon. I'm so excited. It's so close. Please be good.
It'll be good.
I hope it's good.
This looks like the most appealing Mass Effect as someone who's never played
They've
one.
Had almost 5 years at this point. About 4 or 5 years of development. So if it tanks, that's going to be bad. It needs to be better than Mass Effect 3.
That's really fair. So, speaking of brand new news, it's been like a whirlwind of, holy crap, what are we going to do for the podcast? Oh my God, we have to record something.
When are we going to record? We cannot break the streak.
Yeah, 51 weeks in a row, aside from like one late podcast maybe, and I think that was after Denver Comic Con or something. But in recent news, Stranger Things star David Harbour, who played the sheriff, is currently eyed to play Cable in Deadpool 2, as well as, you know, everyone else campaigning
everyone
for the
else
role.
And their mother.
I think my favorite thing was seeing Russell Crowe up for it. I would prefer that. What Russell Crowe took a picture with Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman a couple weeks back. And everyone's like, oh shit, Wolverine confirmed in Deadpool 2 along with freaking Russell Crowe. And I'm like, is he going to be Cable? Or I don't think Logan is like the retiring role. We haven't seen Logan yet, so we're not going to talk about it. No spoiler cast or anything. But oh my God, every review I've heard has been phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Best X-Men movie yet.
Yep. And then on a high note.
Yeah. And then there also was a new Guardians of the Galaxy trailer.
Yes, I actually did see that.
And Russell Crowe's ego. Kind of disappointed he's not a planet.
Yeah, or Kurt Russell. Not
Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
Sorry, I got my Russells confused.
Yeah, we saw Mantis though. Looks like she'll have more than just that one scene.
She's a guardian of the galaxy, Zach. Of Nebula. Course she will.
Yeah, they actually like showed the full team. So we saw Nebula. We saw Yondu.
All wearing badass leather trench coats?
I don't think Nebula was
unify themselves as guardians. That's one of the
Yondu.
My biggest,
yes,
that's my biggest gripe.
Because they're not all wearing trench coats.
No, it's the fact that Guardians of the Galaxy, the movie, basically took Cyclops' father's role in the Starjammers. Do you know who they are?
No, who the fuck are the Starjammers?
So the Starjammers is a sci-fi comic. Actually, Cyclops' solo series dealt with him going to the Starjammers for a while. But they're basically these intergalactic ravagers who hung out with the Chitauri, I think. Whoever, It's so old. Chitauri, I can't remember.
You got the Chitauri, you got the Kree.
Who is Ronin's? That was...
Oh, fuck. Who is Ronin's?
Who's the Ronin the Accuser?
Oh, shit. I don't think it's Chitauri. It might be, but I could be wrong.
Ronin. I got it. Saw a cool Ronin the Accuser cosplay. Now yeah. that we're talking, he's Kree.
He's okay. Kree. Okay.
It was Kree. But basically, the Starjammers were like these space pirates. After the plane that had Cyclops and Alex went down, Cyclops' dad, and I should actually look up his name, he went into space, became the captain of the Starjammers. And like I said, that basically the Starjammers have become what we now know as the Guardians of the Galaxy, in a sense, like theme-wise and really...
It's like they're taking pieces from Annihilation and just throwing them
into
this.
That was even way before Annihilation. That was like the 80s, 90s.
Oh, wow.
And they haven't even took pieces from Annihilation.
Other than just characters.
They can't do Annihilation without, like, Smart Drax or freaking Richard Rider. Mm. Like, when I heard the Nova Corps would be in the first Guardians of the Galaxy, I expected a bunch of idiots wearing gold helmets flying off into space. Nope.
Did not
spaceships.
Get that.
But I really do enjoy the Guardians movie for what it is.
Yeah.
So I guess it's I should
definitely
stop railing on it.
It's definitely
Corsair.
Different.
That's his name.
Ah. So like the Ram.
Yes. Possibly.
Corsair, it's a PC peripheral and hardware manufacturer.
Okay. The second highest answer on who is Cyclops' father is Gaia and Uranus from Greek mythology or Roman mythology. My apologies.
Cool.
So
it's like when you looked up dandelion. Got pictures of flowers.
Well, no, I spelled it out. Dandelion.
Yeah.
Two separate words. And then, you know, being auto-corrected it to dandelion, as in the flower. And then underneath it was, did you really mean dandelion? I'm like, yes, of course I did.
I need a dapper line here.
Things in Guardians of the Galaxy trailer that you liked.
I like seeing the full team because they like teased it. Like we saw that teaser image a while ago of Nebula, Yondu, just like all of them like on like it was like a 90s punk album or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's just cool to see like, oh, OK, Mantis is going to have more than just one cameo in there. Like it looks like she's actually a part of it. They still I'll be interested to see what they do with the actual ego plot since it doesn't seem like it's a huge role. It just seems, again, it's like, okay, some big bads come in. We got to stop them again.
Okay.
I think it'll still be fun. I think that's what has me interested in it is that it looks a lot like the first one, but now that we know who a lot of the characters are, they can go a little bit more wild with it.
Okay. I really do think what would be like the coolest thing ever is that they tease more of the original Guardians, or they actually secretly have Nova in the film.
He just shows up,
like have,
Richard
or they
Rider like develop
appear.
Like yeah, they like the Nova Corps developed a Nova suit or found something.
Yeah, they developed the helmet, the first helmet that gives Richard Rider the power.
That'd be pretty cool.
It falls in lines of Sam's hands or something. Like everyone's kind of just waiting for like the post scene credits in the Captain Marvel movie just to have Kamala. Some semblance.
Oh my fucking god! I would lose my shit. I would actually, like, scream out of joy.
See, you scream about the A-listers. I'm all like, yeah. Holy shit, it's Mantis! Do you know who Mantis is? No? Okay.
Like, who the fuck's a Mantis?
Or freaking Cosmo the space dog in the first movie. I'm like, oh, it's Cosmo the telepathic dog! No one cares, except for me.
I honestly forgot he was in the movie. It's like, does. When I saw the pop figure, I was like, oh yeah, that thing was in that movie. I forgot about him.
He's amazing.
I'm sorry.
Screw you.
He was one good doggo.
Well, look, Cosmo is the chief of security of nowhere. Of course he's a big character. Jeez, Zach.
How could I forget?
Yeah.
Things you liked.
Yeah, things I just freak out about. In other news, too, the Inhumans full cast has been released. So we have a lot of people. We also have Lockjaw. He's
Woo!
Going to appear in the series. He is confirmed. He is going
Lockjaw.
To be a 2,000-pound blue screen dog.
I'll take it.
They actually showed tweets of...
Wish they could have just gotten like a pug or something.
Force perspective every shot.
Yes.
It's kind of funny too, because the old Lockjaw was originally an inhuman, but now he's more like canine than anything in like recent Marvel history.
Yeah, he's just a telepathic dog at this point.
Yeah. But it was really cool because there were leaked photos on Twitter from where they're filming in, I think like Hawaii or LA, one of the two, and they show Black Bolt in his costume, and it's just straight black leather with leather stitching to make it look like his comic book costume, but it's still more black. Like, come on, just give us one costume. And like I said, that's my biggest gripe about like Guardians of the Galaxy is by the end of the film, everyone adopts the Ravagers outfit. I'm like, no, none of you wear that outfit. Star-Lord should be a cop still. Come on.
Space cop. What the hell, man?
Yeah. So the Marvel's Inhuman will explore the never before told epic adventure of the royal family, including Black Bolt, the enigmatic commanding king of the Inhumans with a voice so powerful that the slightest whisper can destroy a city. Oh my God, there's an ad on my phone.
Yep, that's where it closed the page.
Yeah, so Anson Mount will play Black Bolt. Iwan Rayon will play his younger brother Maximus the Mad. Serinda Swan will play Medusa, and Kang Leung will play Karnak.
Whew.
I'm happy that Karnak.
Yeah, I was gonna say, is Karnak in this?
Yeah.
So it's really... here's something that's concerning to me is Kamala is arguably one of the biggest Inhumans right now. Like,
but
where do they put her?
Like I said, that's gonna be the teasing thing in the Captain.
Yeah,
Marvel
do they
movie.
Put her in the the movie verse, or do they save her for this show?
I really hope not. She's bigger for the movie verse.
I would hope so.
And I think after like phase 3 or 4, whatever, when everyone's contract expires,
I feel like
is when they relaunch everything.
I mean, Kamala could be a really good introduction for bringing in like a champions team or some sort of third Avengers wave.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Like, have an older Tom Holland be the mentor for the champions.
Like, yeah,
Miles, Sam, Hulk.
I don't know how you would get Sam in there. Like, since we haven't even had one Nova yet.
I know. I can only hope.
It'll be hard.
Have Miles show up. Again, Miles' story is so easy. And they
what if they brought Kate in somehow?
The rumor right now is that Ice Cube is voicing Miles' father in the animated Spider film. So that'd be cool. But yeah, either do like a Young Avengers or Champions thing when everyone's contract expires.
Yeah, because everyone's mind is, okay, we have Infinity War coming. What the fuck happens after that?
Small events, Vigilante Justice, Civil War 2.
Because both parts coming out within a year of each other?
I have no idea.
I'm going to look that up, because that would... MCU...
So, MCU
release timeline.
I mean, at the same thing, I think...
Timeline.
The Russo brothers, since it's not Infinity War Part 1 and Infinity War Part 2 anymore, they're going to be very self-contained stories, just in the same way like the Justice League movies are Justice League and then Justice League sequel. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what they're trying to go for anyway. Okay, this does not help me at all, timeline. Oh god, this is the actual chronology. That's not what I want. I just want the release dates. Because I think, like, Captain Marvel and stuff comes after both of them? I think? Oh, here we go. So part one, May 4th, 2018. Shit, Black Panther's supposed to come out before that? February 16th. Thor, Spider-Man. Or Guardians is next, then Spider-Man, Thor, Black Panther, Infinity War, Ant-Man and Wasp, Captain Marvel, and then Part 2.
Yeah, okay. I think it's not Part 1, Part 2 anymore. It's
they're going to rename them, but still tentatively Part 1, Part 2 looks like.
Which, I mean... The 1 and 2 thing really does throw a lot of people off.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless, the MCU creates good movies, and they're
What you're going to get out of them.
Yeah, you're so anal. Or not your. The royal you, as in like the fans, are and the creators are so royally and anal about planning everything. It wouldn't surprise me that further down the line they do something Young Avengers-esque or...
I feel like they have to start eventually going into that if they want to keep these movies going. But at the same time, how do you keep your kind of your same formula that's been working, but still make it interesting that draws people in, other than just, oh my god, my favorite character has a movie now.
Well, everyone's a sarcastic asshole in the MCU universe, so...
Like, how long until quips are no longer enough?
Ant-Man. There's your answer. That's when I stopped caring about the MCU as a whole.
But Spider-Man, you haven't even gotten Spider-Man yet. He was Spider-Man's nothing but the master quips. Of quips. I know.
And that one I will reserve my conscience for. But when Ant-Man started making quips every 5 seconds, like, you know, Baskin-Robbins will always find out.
Every scene was a joke.
I have such strong feelings. Speaking of strong feelings, Marvel's favorite symbiote is going to take over the Marvel Universe in June. Edge of the Venomverse.
I'm so upset about
this. Which was announced at Emerald City Comic Con. So in June.
So bitter.
A sinister symbiote across the Marvel Universe, wreaking untold havoc and wanton destruction, featuring some of the most popular characters from March's Venomized Variant Program. This in-continuity series brings you new deadly Venom combinations, giving fans dream matchups from some of comics' hottest creators. The Marvel Universe is about to play host to an army of Venomized heroes, but whose side will they be on? Look for more information, including the characters and creators, soon to be revealed soon. Soon to be revealed soon. Edge of the Venomverse explodes into comic shops everywhere this June! Exclamation mark.
So, we're not even going to have Secret Empire done by then, are we? Probably not.
It would be interesting to see if this was a very self-contained event.
I don't know. Sure. It's still weird, though. If everyone keeps rumoring that Secret Empire is supposed to be this Marvel version of Rebirth, then why the fuck do they keep doing stuff like in between all that? Like,
yeah.
Can we have a focal point, please? Like, okay, you want us to care about that? Oh, look, there's this other Spider-Man thing going on over there. That's kind of cool, I guess. Like,
Marvel as a whole right now, I think Avengers and Spider-Man bounce back and forth from being in the top 10. So it's like whatever gauges people's interest.
I don't even know if Avengers is up there anymore.
And the big thing is that, like, all right, we're going to release these variants and see what happens.
That's bad. That is really, isn't that what happened in the 90s?
I doubt that's the reasoning behind it. I think, like, the Venom variants for this month was to get people hyped for the idea. Because even John said, like, someone at the store bought, like, one of every cover
the Venomized variants. I feel like that guy had to be trying to resell them or expecting them to be of some value.
Or he just likes pretty pictures.
Maybe.
I don't read comics. I just like pictures.
Yeah.
Reading is really hard.
They're all cool. What are these? The bubbles are in the way. I want to see more pictures.
What do you mean there's more inside of the cover? Silly. What's really interesting about the cover is that we have, like, a Venomized Deadpool, Iron Man.
We've already done before.
Two different Wolverines, X-23 Wolverine, two different Venoms, like Venoms. I think Captain Marvel's one of them, or that might be Siren or Toxin or one of those, a Ghost Rider Venom, and a Venom with a bunch of heads. So everyone's kind of like, again, there's a lot of people who are kind of sitting there. It's like, well, Marvel's run out of ideas again. We said the same thing about Spider-Verse, and that's probably one of my favorite storylines out of Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah, that's what that cover is. I will say it's kind of creepy, but it's kind of cool. Except, why the fuck is her body twisting that way? Dear God, that should not be possible.
Well, she's a symbiote, Zach. Come on.
She's, like, literally, like, half twisted. What in the world? Carol, you might need some yoga after that. Or, like, a chiropractor.
But the Venom symbiote heals you. So, it's like, I think the video game, Web of Shadows, was that exact thing, where Venom goes into alternate universes just of the Marvel Universe and takes people over.
I mean, hasn't that storyline been done before, where Venom just takes over people at will, and then they take him out, and then he's like, oh no, I gotta go to another body. It's just like an infection thing. I feel like that's happened before in some medium.
Hmm.
Could have been an animated show or something.
But, you know, a lot of people are very much burned out on the event fatigue. Like, DC's events are, I don't want to say they're low-key because they hype them so much in PR. Like, everyone is kind of, like, gearing for the button. And at the same time, we have Superman Reborn.
We know what that plays into the bigger overall event that's coming.
Yeah.
So it's just these one-off events that's like, okay, cool, we're done.
Yeah, and it seems as though a lot of the Marvel events are very self-contained. I'm just playing devil's advocate right now, because even I'm very much event fatigue, but Clone Conspiracy was very self-contained in the Spider-Man books, with Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man, Silk, and Prowler were the only three titles majorly affected. And then at the end of Clone Conspiracy, we have clones who escaped their melted doom. Spoilers for those who didn't read Clone Conspiracy last week or Omega last week. Still, so we have a lot of heroes who've come back, and you know, Christos Gage is like, fucking Stiltman is back. He was, and who's the guy who turns everyone to dinosaurs? Stegorex?
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
But he was joking around. It's like, did Stegorex come back? And Dan Slott just turns to him and says, no. And if you say another character, I'm killing them. Because, you know, Dan Slott is writing the book for the ninth year in a row for Spider-Man. And it's really interesting. Like, I am kind of excited to see old villain mashups come back, because, you know, you have Doc Ock, who escaped with the ultimate body, and Dan Slott wouldn't spoil that for it. He straight up told someone during the Q&A section that was like, so you're asking about Doc Ock who stole the secret thing in a secret box, and you want to know the secret behind it. Read to find out, dude. And I'm like, great. And to be perfectly honest, the more I heard him like kind of push Amazing Spider-Man 25, the oversized $10 issue that starts the Norman Osborn arc again, I got hyped for it.
$10 issue.
I know, I hate my life.
How many pages is it?
It's going to be 50, 60.
Really? That's it?
Well, the average like Marvel comic is...
still, like, yeah. Freaking Black Monday Murders is 80 pages on average, and it's only $6.
And it only comes out 4 times a year.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Edge of Venomverse could be really interesting. I feel like if Colin Bune got his hands on it, he would write twisted horror story.
It needs to be creepy. Yeah. Like, it can't be like balls to the wall action, because that just defeats the purpose. It's like, oh, they're super strong and they can regenerate and they're trying to fight within. Like, no, we need. What I would like to see is like a horror vibe comic, and like at the end of it, all the heroes realize all the freaking damage they've done.
Which seems like what Champions is trying to say lately. Mm-hmm. If we're supposed to be the good guys, who's helping them? Well, they clean it up. Peace out.
Okay, bye.
Going along,
it's like,
with that,
I helped. You destroyed half the city. I must go now.
My people need me.
It's like the tuxedo masks scene in Sailor Moon.
You didn't
My work is done. I must go now. You didn't help at all.
Yeah, and so we know that Secret Empire, so moving along, talking about events, Secret Empire beginning in May is going to be 9 issues.
Good
the
God.
First...
Another... Oh, it's going to go into next
The
year.
First series is going to be triple released, fuck. And I think it's going to go bi-weekly.
Oh,
wait,
that's
that.
Right. They're doing the weird release schedule.
But they released all the variants, so we don't know if, you know, Marvel Classic variants mean nothing to the story. Madame Hydra is on the first issue, Top Secret on the second issue, Zola on the third, Baron Zemo on the fourth, Magneto on the fifth, Crossbones and Sin on the sixth, Baron Mordo on the seventh, eighth has Taskmaster and Black Ants, who both know Steve Rogers' secret right now, And then Kingpin on the ninth.
Isn't Magneto still dead?
No, Magneto's alive.
Is he?
He's been chilling.
Okay.
He was a good guy. So AVX happened, he had the Phoenix Force for a while, then Professor X died, then he decided he was going to be a good guy after he lost the Phoenix, ran the Uncanny X-Men.
Cyclops went insane.
Cyclops died. Magneto's still running around with the Uncanny, and then when X-Men relaunched with Resurrection, with X in the name, he's technically the default leader of the blue team? With the O5, I think. And the O5 are wary of having him as their leader because
Magneto.
All their life they fought Magneto. Mm-hmm. So
I will say the fact that John Boy Myers is doing the Inhumans art, it's really cool. I really like his style. I'm like, I don't care about the Inhumans too much, but I really like the art.
Yeah, he's doing the Royal Family, right?
I think he's just doing Inhumans.
Okay. One of the two. It wouldn't be a podcast if we never looked anything up.
There's a lot of shit we have to...
Yeah. So a lot of people are looking at the Magneto villain thing. If they're... Marvel is actually going back to basics with a lot of their stuff.
But when? When is the queer point point at the right now? Because everything just seems so confusing to follow.
Speaking of things confusing to follow...
Damn it, segues.
Marvel is going to, I think Steve linked the wrong thing in the notes. Sneezing.
Cool.
There's the Make Marvel Mine initiative. Have you heard of
this? Is this like the DCU now?
All right.
Are they DCUing us?
Hang on.
I feel like we're getting DCU'd.
A little bit. Oh, cool. And the first result on Google for Make Mine Marvel is dead.
Cool.
Okay. Make Mine Marvel is loading on my phone. It's from Bleeding Cool, so take it with a grain of salt.
Oh, joy. Her favorite.
Grain of Salt podcast.
Go with your vinegar.
Make Marvel Mine, or Make Mine Marvel. 3 M's in a row, God. Relaunch in the autumn, that rather than relaunching with a load of new issue ones, instead we get a new legacy numbering. All the old school legacy characters will return with issue numbers that will add up all the issues published of that character's central series so far.
Jesus Christ.
Including the relaunches.
Holy fuck.
Hang the fuck on. Of late, Marvel has done this for promotional effect, like they relaunched titles with number one fairly regularly to benefit the number one sales. This move may indicate a change in direction for that future. This includes a Bruce Banner starring Incredible Hulk and a non-Hydra Captain America that are going to be starting. The first will be Venom, which will keep going after its promotional 150 in May with the 151 in June, and Thor 700 should be coming out in autumn. So, before you start complaining, DC did the same thing with Action and Detective.
Yes, okay. So that makes sense. Because it's like, all right, New 52, all that, we're adding that, just adding that to where we stopped before. I don't know where the fuck we are anymore with Marvel's numbering. Like, Miss Marvel's relaunched twice. So it's like maybe in the 30s or something. Freaking what? Rocket Raccoon's been rebooted like what, 3 times already?
What's kind of nice though is that when Marvel comes out in trade, they continue the numbering. So it's 1 through 6. We saw that with Miss Marvel at Emerald City with the trades.
But that was before they did a full, because Miss Marvel just didn't get. That's like, true. We are not renumbering. We are just continuing until Secret Wars here.
Yeah, that's
because 19 was the clear, all right, this is the last Secret Wars issue, and then we're rebooting to 1 again.
Yeah.
That made sense.
Even Christos Gage made fun of it. It's like, yeah, I wrote that number one issue 25 story.
Thank you. Someone else thinks it's stupid that works with it.
It's just funny. Like, they're just poking fun.
I don't know. I feel like this is going to, like, hurt Marvel even more. Because now it's even more confusing. It's like, okay, so that's issue 25, but I just read issue 12. Like, what?
So they've done it a couple of times in the past. I know number 200 of Ultimate Spider-Man came out with, it was during the Miles story arc, and it was basically revisiting Peter and Aunt May. They're all partying at Aunt May's house because she sold the house.
Right.
And they're thinking of, like, the what ifs of Peter never died.
Yeah.
And then Uncanny 600 or 700 came out. I guess
that's true. That is really Bendis. Weird. Because it was like, wasn't it like in the 40s and then it jumped to 600? So it was like, oh, big number.
Yeah, it's like, oh, it's a milestone of how long we've written this title. So at the same time, it could be cool, but...
It just seems really confusing for the... Just from a casual reader standpoint, like, that seems like the most confusing fucking thing in the world.
Yeah, I agree with you. And speaking on that...
It's like everybody was freaking out when DC was doing it with 2 books.
Yeah. But man, issue 1000 comes out in 2018 and 2019 respectively.
It's coming.
And we're like, yeah, DC. Book and everyone 1000. Else is like, and then at the same time, they're like, shit, like 150 of this Marvel title. Well, Spider-Man stopped at like 700, I think, before they rebooted. And a lot of it, like, the original ploy behind it was to not only, like, gain sales speculation for all those number ones, but to ease people into the comic book culture.
True.
But, like I said, that's why I like about the Rebirth banner as much as you dislike aesthetic.
Like this, I just don't like the design of it. I wish it was, it just kind of looks like they rushed it. They're like, what do we do for
It's curtains. It's a curtain,
it's not even
really
good curtains.
But I really appreciate that they do story title part one.
Yes, that is very nice that they're doing that now.
Yeah, so...
Although I have noticed recent issues, they stopped adding like which part they're on for some reason. It's kind of weird. It's like, this is part of that story, but no longer the part number on it?
Okay, so the Mary Sue... or no, not the Mary Sue. The Marvel Years, which is a website, apparently... this was leaked on, or this was found on Reddit, and someone found the Marvel Generations Amazon listing.
Like the single issue?
So, once upon a time, a skinny kid from New York picked up a shield and charged into battle. A prodigal son lifted a sacred hammer and proved himself worthy. An arrogant genius forged armor that would harness his true potential, and together they became Earth's mightiest heroes. Today, the heroic legacy lives on in the next generation of heroes, and it'll be put to the test as the Marvel Universe's greatest champions unite and charge headlong into tomorrow. So we have, like, the glorious, beautiful Alex Ross painting, and then this description to wildly speculate at until, you know, fall happens and Marvel decides to reboot, which was kind of confirmed at Comics Pro these past couple of weeks.
After talking to John, we have the inside info because he'll talk about it with us.
And Bleeding Cool said so. Salt, grains everywhere.
Oh, so much vinegar.
So the person at the Marvel Years also looked at the phrasing. It's like, okay, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, that's the Avengers. Oh, greatest champions. How coincidental, because Marvel's writing a champions book right now. And then we also have the idea that a lot of Marvel's old characters are going to return this fall in some way, like kind of like how they brought Richard Rider back recently with the Nova series. We still have Peter Parker dicking around with Miles around, and a lot of those legacy characters still remaining as a focal point in some way or form, even though, you know, you have hologram Tony Stark with Riri and Doom running around.
I hope, if anything, I hope that this like fixes the tension between Carol and Kamala, because that broke my heart reading from Civil War. Like, that was the worst part, amongst other things. That was probably the worst part for me about Civil War. I was like, no, but Kamala, you love Carol.
Yeah, and even in that same vein, a lot, it's, you know, Civil War did fracture the Marvel Universe, exactly what they said, and a lot of people were like, no, don't do that.
We don't want that.
Oh, I just saw a really sad picture from fan art.
Are you on Tumblr now?
No, I'm on Reddit. Trying to find where I found this article.
Oh.
But it's really interesting just to see how these things are going to go, because if Generations is supposed to be, you know, the lead into this reboot, it'll be interesting to see actually how they play everything out. Like, is it really going to be like, all right, let's all come together to stop this intergalactic threat, because Galactus is bad again. So, I mean, this is kind of a cool segue for, yeah, we fuck shit up as the Ultimates and the Avengers, and we have to come back together.
Yeah, like, I would love a scene of Carol and Kamala just like, Carol just coming to her, it's like, I realize I fucked up royally, and I'm sorry. I'm sorry I made you do all those things, and I understand why you hate me now. And then they have a heart-to-heart, and everything's good. Yay.
Oh, man. It'll definitely be interesting just to see how everything goes. Like I said, my Marvel titles are mainly
the way spiders. It's been going, Marvel's dropping stuff for me.
Yeah, it was kind of a bummer. Like, I read all of Spider-Woman in trade. I don't collect the singles because that's what Kaylee used to do. And then Dennis Helpless is like, yeah, we're ending on our terms with one more issue. And it's been such a treat to write Spider-Woman for so long. And he's like, and he's on the Spider-Man and the Amazing Friends panel, and literally every other person up there writes Spider-Man. And it's like, and Dennis Hopeless, the friend of the Amazing Spider-Man. And it's like, oh.
And arguably Spider-Woman's not even a super close friend with them. It's mostly Silk and Spider-Gwen that she's friends with. And Captain Carol.
Oh, shit. What the fuck? Bleeding Cool breaking news.
Oh, boy.
Take with salt.
Take with salt. You got me all teased.
Sorry.
Fuck. Am I going to finish myself here? Or what?
So
what's going on?
There has been some gossip. Bleeding Cool Salt.
Shit.
And the current ECCC gossip is that Jeff Lemire's 2-year exclusive Marvel deal is coming to an end.
Oh, shit.
And he's not looking for it to be renewed.
Oh, shit.
And he wants to work on more creator-owned titles. Especially now that, later in the news, the Underwater Welder with Ryan Gosling will be optioned for something. But it's like, IVX finishes soon. That's his current title. Thanos is a limited series. He's leaving Old Man Logan after 25. Moon Knight's already done. Extraordinary X-Men's disappearing. So, he was named the lead writer for X-Men after Bendis, and now there's like less and less for Marvel. Bleeding Cool Assault, everyone. Hooray. Not
he also has like, what, 5 creator-owned books right now?
Yeah, he's...
Even though one of them's ending in an issue. It's probably already done.
Mm-hmm. He has a ton of crazy things.
Yeah, he has, like, Royal City. Shit. What are all the ones he has?
Royal City, Black Hammer.
Yeah, Black Hammer.
Essex County, I think, is still ongoing. And then the last chapter of After Death. Man, Lemire's great. I met him this weekend.
Yeah.
Crap, I'm trying to find where I found this. Oh, here we go. So, from the Marvel years, a lot of people are looking at it and, you know, combined with the Alex Ross style of painting, people are looking at this more like a miniseries than an event, kind of like how Kingdom Come was. It's just, again, wild speculation until fall.
Yay, our favorite.
Yeah, and it's... Some of the speculation is that it's going to serve as a jumping off point for old readers to get into the new legacy heroes by reintroducing the classic heroes. But at the same time, it does sound like a rebirth styled one shot to align everything hiccups in the Marvel universe. Sorry.
Hey, I recreate that was like perfect. And I did that on purpose.
You shut your mouth. So take all the Bleeding Cool news today with a grain of salt, everyone, because we said 2 things from Bleeding Cool's website. Please don't yell at us.
Mm-hmm.
We also do enjoy reading Bleeding Cool articles from time to time, but news...
Sometimes they seem legit. Sometimes. Other times it's just like, let's just spark gossip.
Gossip.
Hey, remember when Cho wanted to... was going to be writing Wonder Woman? Yeah, we haven't heard anything about that, have we?
Rucka asked for a new contract that day.
He's busted
over
down
my dead body. Speaking of Wonder Woman, did you see that video I sent in Heroic Chat of Tina?
Oh, yes. Tina Cowell, I think? See what?
The wonderful lady who tracked the Hans Zimmer electric cello theme for Wonder Woman. Tina Gao?
Probably Gao. Probably Gao.
Yeah, she... she's recording hashtag electric cello for my new Wonder Woman single coming soon. And then she was also recording a metal version with like the electric bass. And everyone's like, you know, this is probably the best thing Hans Zimmer's written in years. And this girl is making it that much better.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone flips their shit over the electric cello.
Yeah. Well, I think when we first heard the Wonder Woman theme, I was just like, what instrument is that? Is that a guitar?
Yeah.
What is it?
It's so great.
Mm-hmm.
So great.
Some people, I know some people who hate it. They're like, oh, it's so stupid.
I love it. Every like, time she turns.
I will agree, they probably overused it a little bit.
But it's better than Wonder Woman. like, you know, every time you fly in Lego DC.
That's just pure nostalgic and cheese factor there.
Speaking of nostalgia, Thunder and Lightning have been cast in Black Lightning.
Ooh, we are really getting Papa Lightning.
Yeah, it's really cool. Nafessa Williams and China Ann McClain to star as Jefferson's daughters in the CW pilot. So we know Nafessa Williams from Code Black and China Ann McClain from House of Pain. And it's really cool because we get the super cool, oh my God, another ad. We get a super cool, the whole, he has a secret identity thing, but then one of his daughters wants justice for everything and he's going to have to be pulled into it because of this. We haven't seen this version of Black Lightning with Thunder and Lightning since like the DC Saturday morning shows.
Yeah.
Like the super cheesy ones with the Animal Man cartoon.
Animal Man!
So it says here that Jennifer, hell-bent on justice and a star student, being recruited by a local gang. But with a daughter, Jennifer, hell-bent on justice and a star student being recruited by a local gang, he'll be pulled back into the fight as the wanted vigilante in the DC legend Black Lightning. McCain plays Jefferson's younger daughter, the teenage Jennifer Pierre, an independent, outspoken scholar-athlete with a wild streak of her own. Williams is Anissa Pierce, passionate and quick-witted, Jefferson's 20-something daughter balances the demands of medical school with her job teaching part-time at her father's school. So it'll be really interesting to see if they have latent Black Lightning abilities themselves, and then kind of like how CW's Flash slowly teased everyone into the show. Like, I don't think Flash season 1 would have worked if it's like, okay, Wally West, okay, Killer Frost, okay, Vibe. Yeah. As much as, you know, it took us 2-3 seasons to actually have a proper Vibe costume show up.
Yeah.
And I was giddy. It was done right. So, man, I really feel like we slammed Marvel quite a bit at the beginning of the episode.
Yep. I think they need to be smacked around a bit to show them that they're not doing things right now.
I do think Inhumans is another cool chance for them to develop a cool TV show, though.
Yeah. I mean, apparently Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been, like, on fire right now.
Yeah. And Star Wars Rebels. Not a Marvel, but a Disney-owned property, renewed for season 4!
Woo!
I screamed away from the mic today.
I'm still haven't watched it. I need to.
Reading the Ahsoka novel like you've been is a perfect jumping on point for season 2.
I need to watch it.
Like, the book ends and then season 2 starts. And you just need to know all the characters. You need to know Kanan's a Jedi, and Ezra's training to be a Jedi, and then Ahsoka. Yeah. And, you know, Sabine and all those other cool characters, too.
Mm-hmm.
Going forward.
And, what, General?
Syndulla?
Hera? Syndulla, yeah.
Yeah, Space Mom. Syndulla for life. All right. So, Just regular old Archie. The series is getting... Where is it?
Can you not find the link? I have the link.
Okay. There's a new series called Jughead the Horror, which finds the titular character turned into a werewolf and on the prowl against fellow Riverdale residents like Mrs. Grundy and Dilton. So Frank Thierry is going to be writing, illustrated by Michael Wash. So really cool writer and cool artist.
That is a really cool, like, movie poster.
Yeah. Thierry comes out and says, what's the first thing that comes to mind when you think of Jughead? The fact the guy's always so damn hungry all the time, right? In Jughead the Hunger, we ask why that is, and we reveal the answer is quite a bit more sinister than the guy that just really likes Pops cheeseburgers a whole lot. It turns out our version of good old Jughead has a lot more in common with his dog Hot Dog than anybody ever realized. Well, other than the fact that Hot Dog isn't whacking and eating half of Riverdale, of course. I think this is going to be cool.
Because it's worked before, yeah, right?
Freaking Afterlife with Archie. Archie meets Predator. I showed you that comic this weekend.
It's so ridiculous.
It was such a cool story. And, you know, Riverdale itself is just blending to the higher interest of Archie at this point. Because now we have a Riverdale comic to run alongside with a TV show. We have the Archie comic, and then like I said, there's so many people out there that are watching Riverdale now that had no idea that Archie was a thing. And now they're like, or they read Archie as a kid and they're like, I'm going to go back and read this. This seems like fun. Mm-hmm. The art teacher at my school is doing that right now. She's like, yeah, you told me about this Riverdale. It's like Twin Peaks. And then Archie Andrews, Jughead, you're making me watch Archie again. I'm like, yeah, it's so great. And then I was asked if I was too young to watch Archie or read Archie as a kid.
Oh.
I'm like, well, they made it forever. I mean, it's in every grocery store. It
still is.
Yeah. Archie's Digest.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And then, like we said a little bit earlier, Ryan Gosling is going to produce Jeff Lemire's The Underwater Welder. I've never read the series.
Same.
But now I guess I'm going to pick it up just to read it.
See what that's about.
Yeah. It's... Again, it's cool that a lot of creator-owned stuff is coming into light as more interest for unique IPs are coming.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Ryan Gosling, he's awesome. He learned how to play piano for La La Land. And he knew tap dancing from his other movies. So he can learn underwater welding.
Sure, why not?
And it's really cool to see Jeff Lemire get more spotlight. I know Descender's been optioned for a film. After Death has been like such a really cool, bizarre thing that I would love to see as a film itself. So, yeah, go Lemire. Really? He's so cool. Can't believe I met him.
He had a huge line, too.
Yeah.
So surprised. You know, here's something I found funny. I probably saw a more consistent and longer line that Fabian Nicieza than Rob Rob Liefeld. This is like, people understand that he was more involved in Deadpool than Rob Liefeld was. Even though Rob Liefeld got the credit in the movie.
Yeah.
Which was some shit.
Yeah.
It's like for the longest time that nobody credited Bill Finger for Batman.
Yeah. I mean, they wrote the book together.
Yeah.
It's just Rob Liefeld drew him. Or the other way around. One of the two. It was Rob Liefeld's idea. It's like, well, if Wolverine's Weapon X, what about the other nine?
Yeah.
It's still ridiculous. And now that Suicide Squad did that too, it's like, this is Task Force X. Maxwell Lord, you're going to be part of Task Force X1. 11. I'm like, the shit? Why are you dropping these bombshells on a book I don't read? Does this garner enough interest? Nope.
Not enough.
I'm sorry, John Romita Jr.
Your art is just bad in that book.
Harley kind of has man face.
What happened? Seriously, what happened?
I like him on the occasion, but over long periods.
Like, Dark Knight 3 has been fine.
He doesn't draw Dark Knight.
Not Dark Knight 3. He was fine in All-Star Batman for the most part.
Yeah.
There were
some... And the Master Race was pretty awesome.
Yeah, he did the... Was it Last Crusade he did? I think it was Last Crusade.
Last Crusade.
That was fine. But, I don't know. He has, like, a very... He's very hit or miss. Like, sometimes it's really solid, and then other times it's just like, oh, God, what happened? Like, drunk Bruce.
Yeah. So all of the DC crossovers with Looney Tunes have been announced. And the one that I'm waiting for, Legion of Superheroes, Bugs Bunny.
Not Martian Manhunter and Marvin the Martian?
Possibly also.
That one sounds pretty ridiculous. And Elmer Fudd and Batman, oh my god.
Zach, the Legion of Superheroes. They're actually being teased right now in Justice League because Cyborg just met Brainiac 5.
Oh.
And then everyone right now is digging around in the 30th century.
Hmm.
So one whole century off from the Legion being active.
Yeah. So they're like the inspiration for him.
They are. That's the kind of the thing. The entire
right, but I mean, like they show up in the 30th century. Yeah. It's just like, oh, the Justice League was here. Like we should help just like they did.
Yeah, I'm really stupidly excited for these. Tom King.
They just sound so ridiculous. I might pick that up just for the sake that Tom King is writing it.
I have to.
His Twitter just with everything he's writing with it just looks ridiculous.
The synopsis was fully revealed, or not fully revealed, but the cover was shown at ECCC this weekend. After a chance meeting with billionaire Bruce Wayne, multi-millionaire Elmer Fudd's obsession quickly escalates into stalking Batman through the dark cities and high-class social settings of Gotham City. God, we also get Jonah Hex in Yosemite Sam, written by Jimmy Palmiotti, who wrote Jonah Hex for a long time in the New 52 and prior to that. So it's really cool he gets another swing at his character. When minor Yosemite Sam strikes it rich, word gets out as everyone comes gunning for his wealth, including the notorious Freeling Gang. To protect himself riches, he hires the bounty hunter, Joni Hex.
Johnny Hex.
Protecting him may be his worst nightmare. And this is like Tex Sierra. So the art's being done by Tex Sierra, and then Lee Weeks is doing the art for Batman. But Tex Sierra's first work in like in the DC Western since like the 1980s is this title, which is crazy. So Sam Humphries is doing the Legion book with Tom Grimmett, who did the Superboy art, and then Scott Hanna, who does Green Lantern Corps. Which is really cool.
Nice.
Lobo Roadrunner is written by Bill Morrison, who's the Bongo Comics co-founder, with art and cover by Kelly Jones, who did Gotham After Midnight. So, like, that super creepy-esque art.
Yeah.
Wile E. Coyote travels so far in the reaches of space to hire Lobo to hunt down and kill his greatest nemesis of all time, the Roadrunner. When the Coyote and Lobo are after you, Roadrunner realizes if they catch him, he's through. Yes.
Good God.
Now, Steve Orlando and Frank Barbieri, who did the art on Lobo, and also are going to be writing the Martian Manhunter Marvin the Martian special with art done by Aaron Lopresti, who did Death of Hawkman. So super gorgeous art, that DC in-house style. Marvin the Manhunter tries to halt the Martian's determination for world domination. Jean is conflicted with his own Martian identity as he attempts to stop the hapless, determined Marvin from blowing up Earth to bits in order to gain a clear view of Venus.
God, it's all ridiculous.
Here's the last one. Wonder Woman, Tasmanian Devil, written by Tony Bedard, who did Rebels, each single letter, not like Star Wars Rebels, and drawn by Barry Kitson, who did Legion of Superheroes, with a cover by Jim Lee. Not since the 12 Labors of Hercules has a Greek warrior faced as great a danger and as destructive a peril as the Tasmanian Devil.
Good God.
I'm stupidly excited for everything.
They're just all ridiculous premise.
I know. I love it. It's very cool to
but
see.
But it's been working. Like, Batman TMNT, freaking Green Lantern, Planet of the Apes.
Green Lantern, Star Trek.
Yeah.
Like, only we could have got that Green Lantern Star Wars book.
Yeah.
Luke Skywalker, the ultimate Blue Lantern.
Mm-hmm.
Would he be a Green Lantern? Lightsaber colors, yeah.
I don't know.
Who knows?
Jin would be a Blue Lantern.
Yeah, I felt really weird. He's actually a Green Lantern.
Jin.
Oh, yeah.
Jin Erso.
Yes. I felt really weird going up to Charles Soule with all my DC titles and my Lando Calrissian book. And I'm like, I really like all of your DC stuff. I read all of your Swamp Thing and Trade. I picked up the Red Lanterns book immediately after Guy Gardner was announced to be. And he's like, oh man, thank you. And he actually drew like a little Guy Gardner with the handlebar mustache on my cover. And I'm like, yeah. And then I was really weirded out by Lando. I didn't think this would be all that interesting, but the premise and the heist of everything was so cool. And he's like, do you regret not thinking it was good? I'm like, I did regret it. And then I told everyone I knew to read this series. And he's like, thanks. Felt really weird and awkward. I just could not stop word vomiting for the longest time.
It's almost
time.
Like, did you tell Dan Slott? I used to hate you.
No,
now
I
you're
did not.
Awesome.
It's funny because everyone kept bringing up his death threats during his panel. It's like, so you've been known to get a lot of death threats because of what you do with the Spider-Man character. I know Superior got a lot of hate and then universal love. You don't like writing Mary Jane, so no one likes you for that. And he's like, you know, Jerry Conway called me one night, first ever conversation I had with Jerry Conway, and told me that you are the strongest Spider-Man writer. I'm paraphrasing here, because you are writing during the age of social media. He's like, do you know how many letters I got after the night of Gwen Stacy died?
Oh man.
It's insane.
It's crazy to think about just the amount of shit some writers and artists just deal with on a daily basis.
Yeah, and I
when feel, somebody doesn't like something.
Every time I read something I really like, I always tag them in something in a tweet and just say how much I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh my god, the Nightwing issue that came out that has Damian team up. Yes. And Dick making horseman puns.
Oh my god.
The entire time. Or horseman wordplay. It's like, so you guys really like the Bible or something? Which one of you is Pestilence? And it's like, yes, this is classic Dick Grayson. I'm so excited.
So much snark.
Yeah. And what's this Twitch thing? Because you're like the one who's... I'm going to back off yes. now.
So this is kind of interesting. So Zach, when you go, if you want to play a PC game, 9 times out of 10, when it's not an EA game or a Ubisoft, or yeah, I think just, does Ubisoft have their own store? I don't know.
Yeah, they have their own launcher.
Okay. Where do you go other than those two places to buy your PC games?
Steam.
Yes, exactly. Steam pretty much has a monopoly that they didn't intend on, but they obviously have the best service.
Or Green Man Gaming. They have really good sales.
Okay. That's besides the point. Shut up.
The Smite high-res launcher, so I can also play Paladins
Stop.
When I'm done playing Smite.
Stop.
Or the Microsoft Store, because Stop. I have Windows 10 PC.
Stop.
Have I ever mentioned the Apple?
Stop. I hate you.
Steve, how do you feel about that? See, if Steve were here, he would back me up.
He would have gone on. It would have gone on so much longer.
What if we switch sides where I'm sitting on that side and you and Steve gang up on me for a podcast?
That might be nice.
Anyways, tell me about the high-res launcher or the Windows 10 store. Anyway. Because Xbox Play Anywhere.
Anyway, Twitch appears to be trying to get into the game selling marketplace where for partnered streamers, so... It's usually people who have the subscribe button are partners. And they're going to start... It's not everyone. There's a pretty good amount. It's like 100 or so games. Like, yeah, I think even Ubisoft actually is partnering with them. To where there'll be this little like sort of like ad thing, kind of like how the subscribe button is. To where if you streamer is playing a game within this program, you can buy it through that stream... Get, like, I imagine some key code or something. I'm not sure how, like, all the details of how that'll work. And the streamer is going to get 5% of those sales. Then Twitch is going to, or the publisher will get 70%, and then Twitch will presumably get the rest. Which is pretty much how it goes, is Steam, I think it's, like, 70% publisher, 30% Steam sales. So, it's a kind of an interesting thing that... Well, now this is just another way that streamers can make money. Like, if they opt into this program, it's like, okay, I'm going to stream, I don't know, Stardew Valley. And, like, 100 people decide, hey, this is a fun game that we're playing or that I'm watching. Like, I want to play that.
It's so fun. I bought it twice.
Yes. So, and it's like, okay, you're now benefiting the streamer in more ways than just subscribing. It's also good for, like, obviously people were kind of worried that it's like there's one, you can't tell if a streamer is, like,
part... Hashtag ad.
Yeah, there's no, like, hashtag ad or anything to know that, like, okay, this person is blatantly promoting this game, which I don't think is really... I don't think that's really going to be a problem, because most people can tell when streamers are being authentic most of the time. Like, if you watch a streamer long enough, you can tell, like, either they're doing a character or something, or, like, the way they phrase things. Yeah. Yeah. PewDiePie,
Markiplier with Five Nights.
Yeah, you know, stuff like that. Like, most people understand that they're playing characters. So I don't think it's a bad thing. It's just, it's going to help streamers more.
Yeah, and I mean, at the same vein, Amazon is also partnered. Are they partnered with Twitch or do they own Twitch?
They own Twitch.
Yeah, so like, oh, if you have an Amazon Prime account, you get 20% off your game, too.
Oh, shit, yeah. I didn't even, like, a Twitch Prime, if you're Twitch Prime, you also can... Yeah,
Twitch Prime, they actually give free indie titles and other, you know, I go on Twitch
they
and
get random. My... yeah, they give you random stuff.
Yeah, like my Steam, or my Smite skins that I can only get through Steam. Like, oh, yeah, I have a purple Ymir skin. I don't play Ymir.
But I have it.
Yeah, still have Twitch Prime because I'm part of Amazon. Mm. Because American Gods coming out in April. Only on Stars and also Amazon Prime.
Oh, yeah. It's coming out on Amazon. That was the most rant. I was like, what are you fucking on about?
I'm on a lot of things.
But yeah.
Mostly life.
I mean, I just think this is a cool way that just benefits streamers more. Like, and like right now, the only way to really give them money is either giving it directly through a donation or subscribing.
Mm-hmm.
Or using bits, which really is just giving them money anyway.
Yeah, and it's really cool because you already do see streamers who will play like an indie title, like Ray Narvaez Jr., formerly at Rooster Teeth, played that indie boxing game, Punch-Out? No, not Punch-Out.
No, not Punch-Out.
Hang on. But it was like, that was like all the rage on Twitch before Stardew Valley came out.
Mm-hmm.
Where, and then, you know, the freaking people behind this game were like, oh, this famous streamer. And they would give the streamer codes to promote their game. It's like,
yeah. I mean, it's already, I think it's a really good marketing strategy because one, the streamers are already promoting your game for you and they're not getting anything other than just whatever. Usually, no. I mean, usually I don't go to a stream to watch the game. I go for the person.
Yeah.
So sometimes they'll be like, yeah, but, there will be times where I go to watch a game. It's like, okay, will I like playing this? Like, for instance, I got into Witcher 3 because I watched one of my favorite personalities from Funhouse stream it during Christmas break. He streamed it for a week. I was like, this game looks really, really good. I should play this.
Yeah, that's why I played Stardew Valley, is because Ray played it. Literally everyone on Twitch played that game.
Mm-hmm.
Ray being the first person I noticed that played it, and I really enjoyed the living hell out of that game. I have over 100 hours on the Steam version.
Yeah, I have like 60.
I haven't played the Xbox version yet. I'm afraid to. That's such fine. A time sink.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I mean, it's a cool thing that's happening. We'll see if any big publishers decide to get on that. But yeah.
Yeah, cool. Definitely. And I think it's a really cool way for a lot of indie titles to get their up and up.
Yeah, Punch I mean. Club. Okay.
Sorry, I've been searching that. But it's a really cool way for indie titles to spread the word about their game and then have...
Yeah, I mean, as long as we don't get those, like, blatantly... I mean, there has to be some, like, legal thing that you have to agree to when you sign up for, like, opt into this. There has to be. Like, you can't... Like I said, I mean, most streamers, you're going to probably get the authentic thing, but, I mean, there's going to be those few people that's like, oh, I love this game so much, it's so great, when... At the same time, it's really hard to make a really shitty game like look good.
What about Five Nights at Freddy's? It's not a shitty game. Its mechanics have stayed the same for the past decade, but I mean the first game was all right. Sorry. Yeah. No ill harm towards the guy that makes Five Nights at Freddy's.
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty cool. Yeah. And like even Concerned Ape, who has been working on Stardew Valley, or even Notch, who worked on Minecraft for literally 5 years before it was ever officially released.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a really cool way to get the word out about your game. And like you said, for streamers to make money, especially for, you know,
streamers. Yeah. Especially, I mean, even just like part-time streamers probably won't gain a ton from it, but hey, it's something. And who knows, like, even if like the whole thing of like, okay, I'm watching the streamer, I really like this game, I want to get it myself. Oh, hey, I could buy it through them and support the streamer. Cool.
Yeah, and if any...
It's like I'm getting the game anyway.
...corporation wants to sponsor the Z2 podcast, we would enjoy having that opportunity.
Z2 sells out.
Can that be the name of this episode?
No, I was going to mention something about Steve being dead, but...
No. I'm going to put his mic right quick.
Go, Steve.
Go, Steve. I brought something for Steve. All the way from Seattle to give to him. And that'll be part of like my presents to everyone for the 1 year anniversary. I'll tell you where your pop is. And I will give Steve his gift. And this is actually, you heard it here first, folks. This is the last time I'm ever going to mess with Zach's pops because the joke is boring.
It's on tape.
It's on tape. No promise about Steve doing it.
No.
You might find one in your fridge later. Kidding. It's just Captain Cold in his parka.
It's in the freezer.
He's in the ice tray, actually. That's why you
find
never
that
found
like him. 4 weeks later. It's like, what the fuck? Why are you here?
Who are you? Yeah, it's really cool. Like, I'm excited to see what can come out of this program, because again, there are quote unquote professional streamers who are sponsored by actual games, and like, you know, they have to play a certain hour of every game every so often. Like, you see the people that just play Smite all the time, and it's like, do you play anything else? It's like, yeah, I've been playing Horizon Zero Dawn. I'm like, but you stream Smite for 7 hours. What do you do?
Well, I can understand it. Like, some streamers, they just want to play something and not have to worry about, you know, interacting with an audience full time and watching chat and all that.
Yeah,
that's like, true. They just want a game that they can just play and not worry about anything.
That's fair. Yeah, my vague recollections of them wanting to stream were like, I wonder if I just play the game if anyone gets an audience. Like, freaking, our friend Robert, he was streaming Trials of Osiris.
Yeah, and like, I think the reason that happens because he was facing like one of the top streamers. Like,
was he really?
Yeah, he was against one of the top streamers, and they won against him.
That's insane. Because, you know, our friends who want to literally just stream from their Xbox onto Twitch, just do it for fun. And like, you know, I watch Robert occasionally when he plays Destiny or some other game. I type in the chat. He doesn't listen to me. And I've known Robert for years.
Because he doesn't have chat open.
Nope. He just plays the game. All right. Do you want to do a discussion question or anything?
We could just short. Talk about your favorite things about Emerald City real quick.
Dude, my favorite thing was meeting all the authors and Scott Snyder's line not taking 3 hours. But like I literally got to meet some of my favorite writers. I got to meet Dan Slott, you know, get to see Scott Snyder again. I got this beautiful Dick Grayson commission from Marcus Toe that scared me because he wasn't at his booth and we had to leave for our flight. But it was really cool just talking and engaging with artists and just telling them, it's like, I've been a fan of your work and I know you hear this all the time, and I really want to be sincere that I really love your work, because things like After Death or things like Witches, mainly like the Batman titles, mean a lot to me from, you know, an emotional perspective, you know, Witches being that story about fear, anxiety, and depression. And then moving over to After Death, where this guy's just trying to find his place in the world, you know, just like an emotional experience as well, as that narrative is so great. And even Descender, I'm like, I don't know how to encapsulate my thoughts into my words, but I want you to know that Descender is on the top of my to-read list when I pick up my pool. And saying that's Jeff Lemire, and then his assistant was joking. It's like, you should have just said that you love everything he wrote except for that one thing, and then walked away.
And then he'll never know what the one thing was.
I know, and I'm like, I don't want to be an asshole. And it was kind of, I was kind of bummed out that Mark Waid canceled on a really late notice, and then Jason Latour, his father, passed the day before.
That's brutal.
I sent my good vibes in a tweet, and I'm sure he got hundreds of them, but he liked my tweet, and I'm like, and you know, it's like, you know, screaming into the endless void of the internet like I always do, but how do I make this thoughtful? And I'm very interested in him as a creator as well as a human being.
So yeah, I'm sure he appreciated it.
Hopefully, who knows?
Maybe that must have been like a horrendously rough weekend for him, so I imagine like just people sending good vibes to him was just nice for him to at least see.
Yeah, and then, you know, seeing Gail Simone again. I try to see her at every wonderful con. She's so fantastic. And like I said, meeting Dan Slott, a guy who I dislike so immensely because of Superior Spider-Man, which I am actually going to go back and read. I read the first few issues. I didn't like it too much, but I'm going to give it a chance. Be still my heart.
Until you throw it across the room in anger. It's like, God, this book still sucks.
No, I know the way it ends now. I didn't actually take any interest in Superior until Peter started coming back. But it was really funny because he was talking about Superior and how that's kind of come down in his legacy as like one of his, a lot of fans' favorite books. And it's like, when he pitched the story originally into Marvel, everyone in the writer's room was like, Could you make it like a 6-issue story? How about 12 issues and you double ship it? And it's like, these assholes don't want Doc Spidey to come out. And then like when the first issue went, it's like fifth printing, everyone's like, can we use this character, please? And it's like, hi, it showed you all.
Ha!
He had some great stories. Like Jason Latour and Robbie Rodriguez's original pitch was Spider-Ben, with Uncle Ben being Spider-Man. But, you know, Dan Slott's like, actually, no, that's a really important character for the Spider-Verse. Can you do Spider-Gwen instead? And then he was talking about the, you know, her current costume, the white hoodie and everything. It's like, that's not how I envisioned her. He tried to, like, veto it. Like, he vetoed Spider-Ben to Mark Lowe, who was their editor at the time. And he's like, I don't want this outfit. It's going to suck. No one's going to like it. And then, you know, lo and behold, literally everyone and their mother wears the Spider-Gwen hoodie everywhere. And he's like, yep, I made a mistake saying I didn't like it. And Spider-Gwen's amazing.
It's like if someone's called out, like, the Jamie McKelvey. I always mispronounce his name sometimes. Jamie McKelvey's design for new Captain Marvel. Like, the one, the current design. Like, it'd be weird if someone just came down and was like, no, don't do that. Because literally, that's, like, everybody's favorite design now.
Yeah, where's her swimsuit? This is garbage.
Everybody wants to forget about the swimsuit.
Yeah. Or, you know, freaking...
The scarf.
Yeah.
The weird onesie. The onesie's just weird.
But it was really cool listening and talking to creators. And then we also went to that really awesome D&D fantasy stand-up show.
I wasn't sure what to expect from that, but that was pretty funny.
The Critical Hit show, huh? This sounds like Critical Role. What do I expect? And it was literally just stand-up comedy. I'm like, this is awesome.
With a D&D setting. You were wondering, like, right before it started, it's like, how? So they're not standing up. How are they going to roll? But the DM was just doing all the rolls for them.
Yeah, and it was, you know, just a very short-lived thing.
It was funny. It's just like, roll. Oh, God, that's a hit.
Oh, God, you're...
And then, what's that, 4d6s? Oh, God.
Yeah. I'll let you know, Caleb getting food poisoning. Emerald City in Seattle is pretty awesome. I would love to go back.
I would, too.
Yeah, just got to see.
My dad told me there's, like, a ton of just places around just to explore.
Like, I did plenty of exploring.
There's more than that, too.
Yeah, you know, the 1 mile radius around the convention center when I was trying to find the Harley Davidson store for my dad.
Yeah.
How about you? What was awesome about ECCC?
Probably Kelly Sue and Matt Fraction. Like, Matt Fraction has been, like, one of my favorite writers ever since I found his Hawkeye. Why?
Did the mic pick it up?
I don't know, actually. I think it might have. Oh, God. I can't tell.
No? Damn it.
I don't know. I'm sure it's there. It could be. The waveform might just not be big enough. But, yeah, I mean, talking to Matt Fraction, I mean, he has Chip Zdarsky's Harvey Award with him. And he was like, $1 and you could take a picture with it. I wish I had done that now, in hindsight, just because it would have been funny. Yeah, I mean, he was super cool. He was just a really chill guy to talk to. He had some really funny stories I was listening while I was still in line, like right before, about how... He, like, knew someone who worked at Miramax, and they were, like, trying to get Robert De Niro for a movie, and the person called him up and just yelled Bobby into the phone. Bobby! And didn't realize it was actually Robert De Niro that they were calling.
Oh.
So they didn't get Robert De Niro for that movie.
God.
It's pretty funny. And then Kelly Sue is, holy crap, she is so tiny. But she, I can tell she's just like,
you're
she will
also
kill
standing
you.
Over 6 foot tall.
Yeah. I understand why Mariko loves her so much. It's like, she is Mariko, like, in another life.
Okay.
Like, those two, I can tell, like, exactly are, like, the same personality.
Mm-hmm.
But she was really cool to talk to. She gave me some info on what's happening with Pretty Deadly next and how. Each, like, the first arc was all about, like, a Western, like, what Western style of death. And then the second arc was all about this World War One setting. And then the third arc that's coming is going to be this crime noir in 1920s Hollywood, which is going to be really freaking cool to see.
Yeah, I need to pick up those trades.
Yeah, it's a cool story. I really like it. And the art's beautiful.
Yeah.
What else?
Ooh, can I tell another story?
Chris Anka.
There you go.
Yeah, Chris Anka was cool. It was funny because I told him about how we referred to Star Lord as stupid, sexy Star Lord. He's like, man, we should have made the tagline then. That's way better than all new Star Lord or anything. And then I got a Zarya commission from him. He's just like, yeah, I don't think I've done any Overwatch commissions yet. So I was like, yes. I was
eBay, you heard it here first.
No, I'm not giving that up.
Zach Brooks has, yeah, you use your real last name on this podcast.
Yes.
Sorry. Zach Brooks has the first Zarya commission ever.
Yes.
It's like the people trying to flip Love is Love because it's the first Harry Potter appearance in comic books.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hate those people. God. Motherfuckers.
Freaking dicks. What else?
Did you tweet your picture of Zarya?
Yes.
Did you retweet it with Z2?
No.
Okay, I got you.
Okay. Yeah, we will retweet that photo. I was exhausted at that point, so I was not smiling, which I feel... I'm just the worst person at taking pictures ever.
So annoyed.
I am literally the worst at taking pictures.
Well, Anka's also giving a straight face.
Anka gives that face for every picture, though.
He has a really awesome mustache.
He has quite the mustache. There was a funny one where a group of people were getting a signing with Jason Momoa. So they got his Momoa print, took a photo with it, and then brought it to Anka. So it was a picture of Anka holding a picture of Momoa holding his Aquaman print.
That's awesome.
It was hilarious.
Yeah. I like everyone that was like, every time I asked for a photo, it was like, we have to do a pose, though. Mm-hmm. Like, Dan Slott was like, we have to do the web slinging pose, so fingers up. And then after my photo,
he's like, remember, everybody, devil horns, web shooter.
Worshipper of Satan, Spider-Man. listening to Dan Slott talk, though, was really cool. And like, I showed him my variant for Amazing Spider-Man 1 from the all-new, all-different period that had all of the characters. You know, it has Silk, Spider-Gwen, Miles, Peter, and Jessica. And then he's like, yeah, one of the things that I don't tell people is that this cover was originally supposed to have Ben Reilly too in the Ben Reilly in it, in the red suit with Jackal helmet. And I'm like, what? It's like, yeah. I'm like, how far in advance do you plan? It's like crazy. He's actually one of the writers that still uses the Marvel method of he sends the entire story to his right artist, then his artist draws it and then sends it back to him, and then he writes the script.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really cool. I didn't actually realize people still wrote like that, which is insane.
Yeah.
Also meeting Troy Baker, or going to his panel. He was like, I got up at like 4:45 this morning, and I would punch a baby for some coffee. And he literally asked the crowd, does anyone have a baby? I would love some coffee. So someone actually got him coffee by the end of his panel. And everyone in the crowd cheered. But he also kind of, he didn't spill the beans on The Last of Us 2. He did talk a lot about it. It's like, first story is about love. This other story is about hate. It's the same thing Neil said. And so that I'm allowed to say it.
Yeah.
And he said when Neil Druckmann told him the story of The Last of Us 2, Troy Baker just sat down and cried. And I'm like, don't do this to me.
I can't do this again.
I can't do this three times.
My heart. And like, one of us is going to have to get a PS4 Pro and play it together or something.
I already have a PS4.
It's going to be only Pro, I think.
Oh,
it's been one of those games. I assume. That's what I've... Because everything they've said is it's developed on a PS4 Pro.
I'm blaming Neil Druckmann and Kojima right now. Because they're probably the PS4 Pro spearheads.
Probably. Not like Sony's trying to push it or anything.
Curses. Kojima needs that engine. He needs the processing power.
Kojima needs a lot.
What was it? Who played Caecilius? Mads Mikkelsen said Kojima called him and explained the plot of Death Stranding over the phone, and he still doesn't understand it.
He's like, okay, sure, I'll do it though.
I can't wait to have to like read all of Reddit afterwards to understand.
Uh-huh.
But dude, ECCC was so cool.
That was fun.
I wish we also went to the Funimation building at some point.
Yeah, because they were just
there was so much stuff though to go through. Like, going into the exhibitor hall, and I'm like, wow, this is really tiny. And then there's the sky bridge.
Yeah, there's this second half.
And I'm like, oh dear God, I'm overwhelmed.
Yeah. I was also kind of surprised of the lack of modern comics. There was literally one booth selling, like, recent stuff.
Yeah, I think conventions is all about, like, keys and...
Yeah, I guess, but at least for the most part, I've been able to have pretty decent luck.
But that booth that you bought your stuff from is the same booth at every convention.
Yeah.
They were at DCC also.
They're a good booth.
Yeah. I mean, if, what was it, like Mile High showed up, they would definitely just everything galore.
Yeah.
But all the panels were really cool. Talking to artists was really fun. Like Marcus Toe is awesome. Michael Cho and his assistant were the best ever. Michael Cho draws for Marvel. He does like all the Fight Night variants and like the super minimalism art covers. And I'm just sitting there staring at my phone, kind of like bouncing up and down. As the assistant goes, it's like, is everything okay? I'm like, yeah, I had to leave for my flight in like 15 minutes and I'm waiting for Marcus Cho, who's supposed to be here at 3. It's like, I'll text him for you. Don't worry. And then he wrote down all of my contact information if Marcus didn't make it. And I'm just like looking back and forth in the crowd trying to find Marcus Toe. I'm like, oh dear God, I have to leave. And then he showed up and I'm like, yay. And I got this awesome Dick Bats commission. I also retweeted with the Z2 Twitter from myself because I'm, you know, a self-promotional ass.
Hey, I went to a panel about that.
Yeah. Self-promoting.
Yeah.
Just scream into the endless void.
Yeah, a bit. Yeah.
That's how I approach it.
But I mean, looking at it, it's like, okay, we're doing that. We could probably do that a bit better. But it was some good info.
Yeah. Like I said, we're going to fight Thingy outside Long Box again.
Once again.
And one of these days, there'll be an actual fist fight and we're going to lose.
I don't know. I feel like we could probably take them.
We can probably outrun them.
Yeah. Gabe just like falls on us and we can't move.
Like I said, if we start up the Hall of Justice cross gym in the back of John's store, or
just cross fitting with long boxes,
yeah, I can deadlift 3.5 long boxes multiple times.
Mm-hmm. Just get a bar and then just thread the boxes through them.
How to ruin comics?
I don't know. You could use like the center of the bar as like the divider. You can make it work.
Then it wouldn't be 3.5 long boxes. It'd be more. Anymore. You would need more. Do more math.
Yes.
But, oh man, dude. Emerald City was so much fun. I love going to out-of-state cons lately just because DCC Seattle, has been depressing.
As Kayla put it, Seattle is so a city of aesthetic.
Yeah, it's so hipster.
It really is, but it's a cool place.
I adopted a beanie and grunge trash jeans. I had to throw those jeans away. The wallet pocket hole is too big. That's my favorite pair of jeans.
Ripped jeans.
Ripped jeans, literally.
Yep.
All right, let's wrap up with fucking
the thing we do.
Recommendations,
every week.
That bullshit. Sorry, I got 4 hours of sleep, audience. We landed at
11,
10 ish.
We didn't get back until like 11.
We got back about 11:30-ish dropping Zach off, and then I had to go home, and then I had to make sure Kayla's put to bed right because she's still kind of sickly. I went to bed about midnight and my Fitbit told me I got like 4 hours and 12 minutes of sleep.
Ouch.
And then I got up at 5 to go to work.
This is why I took the day off.
Yeah, all my coworkers are like, I don't even recognize you, because normally I'm wearing like a nice tie, teacher attire, and today I'm wearing a hoodie and sweatpants, and they're like, yeah, it was really weird seeing you outside of that. I'm like, you know what? Just
leave me alone.
I got my report card done at like 8 a.m. this morning, so the rest of the time was planning for the week.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. So recommendations this week, Zach, do you want to start?
I guess I'm still behind. I didn't actually get a chance to go through any of last or this week's stuff.
But maybe you can do something that you're reading now.
Like right now or...
Yeah, I mean, you've got that giant compendium you've been reading.
Yeah, there's the Mass Effect Omnibus, which is, it's pretty cool. It's a lot of, like, in between Mass Effect 2 and 3 stuff, which probably would have been more cool to read then, before the game. It's so fun to
learn about Jack.
It's still pretty cool, though.
Is that Jack? The, like, asshole dude that appears in 3 who, like, disses on Shepard? With the he has, like, a mohawk. He's, like, buff. He's on your squad.
Oh, no, not Jack. Fuck. He doesn't have a mohawk. Oh, wait, yeah, he does kind of... He has, like, a faux hawk.
What game was he in?
He was in 3. Fuck, okay. What is his name? They made a movie about him.
No, they had a book about him.
No, they had a movie, too. Really? An animated movie.
Is that important?
It was. It's more just his backstory. That's pretty much what the compendium, Mass Effect compendium is just backstories. Like, there's a Liara story that's pretty cool of what she was doing, because... In Mass Effect 2, they mention that she's tried to find Shepard's remains at one point, and that's what that story is, which is pretty cool. It's like, oh, okay, so this is what that story was. There was also the fix that I read this last week, which was good. The fix is such a weird, bizarre book by Nick Spencer and Steve Libier, but it's just so ridiculous, and it's been really good.
Did you get that signed by him this weekend?
I got it signed at DCC. He was there, okay. Too. Yeah.
It's not
good. Yeah. Ones. The fix had... God, I forgot what happened in issue 7, but issue 8 reminded me. It's like, oh, God, Pretzels got shot. But he's okay.
The dog?
Yeah, the dog. He was being a hero. He was being one of the main characters. I'm spacing on his name. He was about to be shot at, and Pretzels dove in to save the day because they'd grown such an emotional bond. But it's okay. Pretzels lived. He's okay now. I was worried, too, throughout the whole book. I was like, oh, God, is Pretzels going to make it?
Jack's but he's okay. The girl that with all the tattoos, right?
Yeah, with the bald head.
I'm still scrolling through.
It's not Jack. I know for a fact it's not
James.
Jack. Yes, him.
It was a J name. James Vega.
Yeah, Vega. That's funny.
Okay, sorry. Didn't mean to interrupt. What's new? I've been up for so long.
Finish us out then.
All right, so my pick of the week this week is Nightwing. Big surprise there. It was really like the only thing I was able to read before ECCC.
Yeah.
It's the Nightwing battles the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, which is just a street gang. And the story opens up with Damian reading Twitter, and they're talking about who should take the Batman throne after, you know, Bruce metaphorically retires or physically retires because he's dead or something. And everyone's like, yeah, Nightwing, Nightwing. Even the Teen Titans are like, yeah, Nightwing should take over. He was already Batman once and all. And then Damian goes to Bloodhaven to fight Richard. And so Richard gets on the phone afterwards with Sean, his love interest, the freaking love letter in the last issue was amazing, or his monologue. And Sean says, like, Dick, I'm late, not for like late for a job, but I'm late. Can you get me a pregnancy test? Oh, and Dick freaks out. And then when he gets back to his apartment, Sean's missing. She's been kidnapped. And in her apartment is his copy of Robin Hood, which he lent Sean, which has coordinates to Richard Coeur de Lion, Richard of the Lion, who was a king in actual England at the time and was a character in Robin Hood. So Dick and Damian team up to go to France to try and rescue Sean. Meanwhile, we also have Deathwing, former Teen Titans villain, who is lurking in Bloodhaven while Dick is away.
Oh, is that who's wearing the red?
Yeah, the red New 52 costume. So that's really interesting. And I told Marcus Toe, I'm like, I really like Sean. I really like her.
Too.
She's been such a cool new love interest. And I'm like a Dick and Barbara person, really hardcore. And he's like, well, we have big plans for Sean. And I'm like,
okay, good.
Good big plans.
She's not going to get axed, right?
Please. Is no. She going to be in a big refrigerator planned? Or like, and he wouldn't say anything else from that. I was kind of hoping to squeeze some sort of detail, but I just really love it. And even Damian, who sees the pregnancy test, it's like, Grayson, you fool. And as Dick is running through the city, Damian peers and Dick calls him out. It's like, I'm not here for your childish petty fights right now. You are a teenager and you're hormonal. I don't want to deal with it. I need to find Sean. And Damian's like, we'll find her together. And then behind him is the Batmobile from the Grant Morrison, Frank Wheatley era. And Dick is like, you stole our old Batmobile. And I'm like, yes. Because like I said, Grant Morrison's Batman and Robin run was the first Batman title I ever read, other than like trades, like randomly at Barnes and Noble. Like, that was the first physical DC trade I ever bought in, like, 2009 when it came out. And I'm like, yes. And the variant cover is a riff on the Batman and Robin number one. And I was about to buy a new copy of it because I didn't know if I had it or not. And I found it in one of my old long boxes. I'm like, side-by-side picture, yay. I need to get them framed once I get them signed.
Like, I need to deal with all my sex criminals. The sex criminals and Wicked variant. That the whole thing of the child, yeah.
Oh, yes. Oh, God. It was so great. And there's something else I read, and I just can't remember. Maybe I'll think about it, maybe not. But like I said, I haven't had time to read, and I'm actually going to go home and read before I fall asleep.
Pass out with a book on your face.
That's the life I dream, Zach. But, yeah, and I also, crap. Yeah, I think that's it. I haven't been playing anything lately either, so there's no other recommendations for me to talk about. As always, this has been a brand new episode of the Z2 Podcast, and thank you guys for listening so much. We wouldn't be doing this without some of you here who decide to listen, all 10 of you. We appreciate you so much.
I really hope it's more than 10 at this point.
Yeah, I mean, we had the 8 listeners joke, and I think we had like 2 more, right? And Tim Husky, thank you for texting me during the middle of the podcast and sending me the picture of, hang on, let me pull it up. Guy takes a bath in 500 pounds of clear silly putty. Thank you, Tim. I don't know what I would be without that information in my life. Spider-Man Omega. That also came out. I read that before the flight.
Oh, the Clone Conspiracy one?
Yeah, the epilogue to Clone Conspiracy. That should have been issue 6.
Yeah, still don't they call it.
John was so mad.
I'm mad even.
I didn't even know that's a special order for you because it ends at 5. And
I'm upset just because of
that issue is really awesome for the sole fact that it's Spider-Man talking the Rhino down from like being a rage monster. And then Kurt also turns his wife and child into lizards. Anywho. Thank you guys for listening. We really appreciate you, and we really appreciate, hope you really appreciate us and all the things we do. We're recording late at night just to get this out to you on time because we are dedicated for you. Hopefully next week Steve's live. Like I said, we have some really cool things we want to do in the future, and let us know what you guys want to hear. We officially declared war against Thinking Outside the Long Box again. You know, that was our MO at the beginning. If you want us to declare war against any other podcast that like to play card games, let us know. Except Yu-Gi-Oh, we do not want to go to the Shadow Realm. So
I will fight you though. I still have my deck.
This card's banned. Be sure to give us a rating wherever you hear us, whether it be Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, which we use again. And
yes,
just give us a hey, give us a shout out, and we'll give you a shout out back. Also, be sure to vote for Thinking Outside the Long Box in the Pottern Wars thing.
I can't remember what they're calling it. It's pretty much like a bracket where you just vote against 2 podcasts at once.
Yeah. Yeah, it's for the Pottern family. Just give these guys a vote. We quoted the tweet, so it'll be, you know, the tweet literally says, "Hey, our boys Thinking Outside at Outside Long Box have made it to another round. Hit them up with a vote, and we'll hit you up with some good vibes this Monday." So if you hit them up with a vote, you get a special tweet from the personal Twitter of the Z2 Podcast. So interact with us. We like talking to you guys instead of screaming into the endless void of the internet. And thanks. Love you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Wrong song.